So some historians have underlined that there's a certain malleability about Saddam's own stories of himself. And this sense of self-fashioning, of creating a persona for oneself, may be something shared with the other dictators whom we've examined in this course. Saddam Hussein was born, thus, around 1937 in a small, muddy village close to the larger town of Tikrit on the Tigris River into a poor peasant family. His father disappeared mysteriously. His fate is unknown. Tikrit itself is notable, though it's poor, is notable still as the birthplace of another famous man, Saladin the Great, the 12th century Arab conqueror of Jerusalem. Saddam Hussein, thus, though born into lowly origins, could look back on what he felt were portents of his own future greatness. And such portents were there also in his very name. One translation of Saddam's name is "he who confronts," and this was a telling verdict on his later career. Young Saddam suffered at the hands of classmates precisely because he didn't have a father. It was sometimes suggested that he was illegitimate, and his childhood was an unhappy one. When his mother remarried, he was abused by his stepfather and would flee to live with an uncle of radical racist views, indeed a Nazi sympathizer, in Tikrit and later in Baghdad. His uncle looked to the Nazi regime and Hitler as a heroic regime that might rescue the Arabs from domination by colonial powers like the British. Saddam was entranced by his uncle's nationalist enthusiasm and fervor, but also became notorious as a street thug and a bully. We've spoken earlier in our lectures about the mobster outlook and mentality of many of the elites of totalitarian regimes. Saddam Hussein's origins are located in just this sociological group. Saddam Hussein joined as a result of a first political murder that he committed, was invited to join a Ba'athist coup attempt against the current leader of Iraq in 1959. But it's suggested by historians that this botched assassination was in fact due to Saddam Hussein's ineptitude himself. He started shooting too early and was himself wounded in what amounted to a clumsy attempt. He fled to Egypt after its failure, and there, in a formative period, rethought some of his political ideas and changed his political notions. While in exile in the 1960s, Saddam reportedly became fascinated with another leader of stature of an earlier period, Joseph Stalin. He was intrigued by Stalin's one-man rule, his seemingly absolute control, and later, once in power, Hussein would imitate his show trials in particular. A few years later, Saddam Hussein reportedly became intrigued with Adolf Hitler, the dictator of Nazi Germany as well, not out of a great feeling of sympathy for his particular ideas, but certainly out of an admiration for Hitler's devious maintaining of his own control. Saddam Hussein's rise to power would be brisk after this period in exile. He returned to Iraq in 1963 after the Ba'ath Party came to power, but it was soon overthrown once again, and Saddam Hussein would spend 2 years in prison. The Ba'ath Party retook control again in 1968. This gives us a clear image of the turmoil that was current at the time, and Saddam would soon rise to prominence. In July 1979, Saddam would take over leadership. Perhaps from those days when he was abused by classmates and fellow villagers in his town of origin, Saddam Hussein seemed to have learned the lesson that he could trust only his very closest relatives, in particular blood relatives. He gathered some of his friends, and especially relatives from Tikrit, to his center of power. And they constituted an inner circle. An inner circle that included his sons, who were famous for their brutality, Uday and Qusay. This group of relatives and friends, hailing many of them from Tikrit, formed a circle that often was compared to the mafia, because they amounted to mobsters in control of the country. But Saddam Hussein would continue to build up around himself a formidable base of control, including in particular not just the regular army, but the Republican Guards as well, who were elite core troops The army's loyalty might be suspected. The Republican Guard's loyalty was perhaps trusted a little more. But even they, for Saddam, were nonetheless objects of his paranoid suspicion. An elite within the elite had to be established, as so-called special Republican Guards within the Republican Guard were a trusted elite unit.